Chapter 36. The Scholarium.
Tutor Granelton, pray, may I speak with you?
9 moons later, Thalen stopped the tutor on the path between the library and scholar's house.
Thalen had tried to work himself up to approach the elderly man for weeks. Now he felt his pulse throbbing in his ears.
You are...
I'm Thalen of Sutterdam, sir.
I've heard of you. You are studying earth and water with tutor Irinia.
Yes, sir.
Well, I know nothing whatsoever about mountains, rocks, riverbeds, and whatever else it is she analyzes, so I'm afraid I cannot help you. If you will excuse me, the cold chills my toes.
May I walk alongside you, sir? I wanted to ask you something that lies within your compass. I wanted to ask you about the War of the Priests and the treaty that ended it.
So? Been reading the broadsheets in the common rooms, young man?
His tone was dismissive, even acerbic.
There is much more to know about history and diplomacy than the latest gossip mangled by scribblers.
Yes, sir, I realize that.
Thalen pressed on in a rush.
I wanted to ask you which theory has more merit, that relations between states should be regulated by the rule of law, or that all countries have a duty to protect their own self-interests through force if necessary.
Granelton stopped on the path and peered over his spectacles at Thalen.
You have been reading, I see. Here, carry these for me.
Abruptly, he handed Thalen 4 heavy volumes, which freed his own hands to pull his fur-lined cloak around him closer.
Both have merit.
Thalen's mouth gaped.
Sir, how can that be so?
Rocks and lakes are comparatively simple things. People, however, are complicated. Nations of people compound the complications, and history's effect on groups of people, an endless, fascinating enigma.
Thalen followed Granelton into the building and slowly up the stairs into his chambers.
Put those books there, the tutor ordered. Sit down, young man.
Thalen had to discreetly move more books off the only chair to do so. The old man peered at him over the top of his spectacles.
You're the one with the memory, are you not?
Yes, sir, said Thalen.
He continued in a rush.
But memorizing facts is nothing. It comes easily for me. But other students can do this too with a little more effort. The real excitement, I think, lies not in the information, but in the whys. Why are some lakes clear and others full of algae? It has to do with the temperature of the water, the depth of the lake, and the lake's sources.
Well, then, you've got your why. You should be happy.
But I find I am not, sir. I need to understand why the Oros broke the treaty by invading Alpitar.
Oh, that's even easier than your algae question, said the old man impatiently. They are hungry, and Alpitar is a modicum of food. The more complicated question is this. What are the other 4 nations that signed the treaty going to do about this incursion?
Granelton rubbed the bridge of his nose where the wire had pinched a red indentation.
If you have been doing some reading, how do we define a great power?
It's not an issue of the nation's size or riches or how massive an army it can raise, answered Thalen. Historians say that great powers wield armies and magic, either through many citizens or through a select class of priests or royals. Ega and Rotherod were once great powers, but no longer, since we believe they have lost their magic.
Correct. Which leaves Oromondo, Wirrendale, Lotherod, and across the grey ocean, Wyland.
Tutor Granelton leaned back in his chair, taking on a lecturing tone.
Alpatar did not sign the treaty, and it has no strong alliances with great powers. We don't have any conclusive evidence about magic within Alpatar itself. For all we know, it is a country of shepherds living in isolated hamlets. I would have hazarded that the spirit Soleil guarded its people, but apparently not, or not in any way we can determine. So the country lay unprotected, a goose plump for the plucking. Though if the Oros were more clever and far-sighted, they would have preserved Alpatar as a colony rather than just raiding it and disrupting all its agricultural resources.
Eagerly absorbing this information, Thalen blurted out, "Sir, would you consider taking me on as a reader?"
"Young man,"
Granelton leaned forward.
"Students generally stick with their studies. You've been concentrating on earth and water for many years. To switch at this late moment would be highly unusual. Irinia might accuse me of poaching one of her students, and that would be most unpleasant for me."
"I realize this is irregular, sir," Thalen replied, straightening his stance and meeting the tutor's gaze.
"I know that Irinia works her students hard, but you can't have heard that I'm an easier taskmaster. Tell me, why do you want to switch fields of a sudden?"
"Sir, my brother joined the cavalry back in Sutterdam. When I went home at summer solstice fest, he said the cavalry doubled its training and started seeking recruits."
"A wise precaution. Cavalry officers can usually read maps," commented Granelton dryly.
"Yes, sir, but so can I. If the Oros didn't gather enough food in Alpatar, they might look northward toward Melodrin. And after Melodrin, I keep thinking, all they have to do is cross the Causeway of Stones to breach the Free States."
"And so, nowadays, you are thinking that while knowing why lakes are clear or full of algae is all well and good, knowing history and diplomacy may be a matter of life and death for countries and for people. Indeed, for the Free States."
Thalen's eyes widened with surprise that Granelton had read his mind so clearly.
"Yes, sir. Have other students been approaching you with the same request?"
"No, no."
The elderly man's voice carried more than a touch of bitterness.
"Most readers think of history as dry, dusty, and dead. They would rather chase seals, filter water, or compose music. They do not realize that knowing history is the only way to make educated guesses about present quandaries. Well, if you are going to read with me, you have got much work to do, and precious little time in which to do it."
Granelton held up his hand and ticked off his fingers.
"First, however, you will need to visit Tutor Irinia and the rector and get their permission. Secondly, for tomorrow I assign The War of the Priests, Its Causes and Consequences by Tordwell, Tiomkin's Ghost Walkers on the Steppes, The Melodrini, and Gomery's The Benefits of War."
"Yes, sir."
Recognizing that he had been dismissed, Thalen stood up and approached the door.
"Oh, young man," the tutor called after him. "Thirdly, get yourself a bow and a sword and start practicing."
Since Thalen was already in Scholar's House, he decided to approach Tutor Irinia before he lost his nerve. Tall and bony, she stood in her meticulous office, labelling soil samples in her precise hand. The only thing ever out of place about Irinia was her hair, which, thin and wispy, always dripped down from her pinned-up style. She looked hurt when he broke the news, and he fumbled awkwardly in trying to explain it to her. He didn't want her to believe that he had tired of working with her, so he stressed the dire consequences of the Oro threat. Tutor Irinia gave her permission for him to leave her tutelage, but as he was exiting the room, she remarked,
"But Thalen, the clarity of a lake can also be a matter of life and death. Don't you understand that?"
In her chamber, Rector Miki gazed at him with great curiosity.
"Thalen, Thalen, Thalen of Sutterdam, what are we going to do with you? You are a most unique specimen, truly most unique."
Thalen thought she was going to prod him or dissect him to try to find out what made him different. However, though she stared at him intently, she did not bar him from switching subjects. After these interviews, Thalen trudged across the snow-covered grounds to the library. He had already read one of the books Granelton assigned, so he had only two to study for the morrow. These, however, weighed him down like a potter's wheel, and he felt apprehensive as to what he had gotten himself into. At the refectory, Thalen found Quinneth and Gusty sitting side by side, lingering over their plates at a long trestle under a chandelier brimming with candles. He slid on the bench across from them and explained about his change of focus, hoping they would support him.
"I wish you had consulted me before this rash move," said Quinneth. "Granelton has almost no readers because he's so cross and difficult. And he has been fixated on Ormondo for decades, long before these events in Alpitar."
"Leave Thalen alone," said Gusty. "He's allowed to change his mind. Change can be good."
"You just say that because you're fickle," answered Quinneth.
"One day you say you'll marry me tomorrow, and the next day you say never."
"Ask me today," said Gusty, licking her lips.
"I asked you this morning, and you said, ask me later."
"Poor Quinneth," Gusty teased. "You're having trouble getting the timing right, aren't you?"
"Stop flirting in public, you two," said Thalen. "It makes me uncomfortable."
"Granelton also told me I need to learn basic weaponry. He spoke of archery and fencing."
"Really? How peculiar," said Gusty. "Ormondo is hundreds of leagues from here, but if you're truly eager to learn archery, I'm happy to teach you. I'm a crack shot, and I brought my gear."
"When did you learn archery, my gentle dove?" asked Quinneth with an ironic twist on the last words.
"My father taught me."
"You never cease to amaze me," said Quinneth before turning to Thalen. "I might be able to teach you how to handle a sword. My father wasted money on a fencing master for years. My grandfather was in the military, you know, always prattling on about winning glory for the family name."
"Doesn't sound as if you're really keen," Thalen commented.
"No, I hate fencing, but I need some exercise if I'm going to be trim enough for my bride-to-be."
"Isn't it too cold now?" Thalen glanced out the high window, where the wind shook the bare trees in the early winter light.
"Nonsense! Do you think enemies wait for perfect weather? Besides, we'd warm up soon enough if we're active."
The next morning, Thalen reluctantly pulled himself out of bed and met his friends on the gamer's field, a flat meadow ringed with trees behind the library. Gusty demonstrated how to stand, hold the bow, and knock the arrow. Aiming for the elm they used as a target looked simple when she did it, but Thalen's arrow slipped out of his grasp and caromed off to the left. It took him 10 tries to even touch the bark. When it was Quinneth's turn to instruct him with a sword and dagger, Thalen felt even more awkward. He kept slipping in the snow, and he'd discovered fencing entailed too many things to think about simultaneously. His feet, his weight, his grip, and his gaze, not to mention his strikes.
"I'm going about this all wrong," Quinneth graciously concluded.
"What a lackwit! I need to get a set of wooden practice swords. That's what I learned on. Then you can bang away without fear of hurting anyone much."
Later, in the library, other students saw them carrying weapons and inquired about why. Two students Thalen knew from Tutor Irinia's laboratory asked if they could join. Accidentally, Thalen had started a movement. As word spread of their early gatherings, about a dozen readers and even a couple of the staff decided to participate, either for the physical exertion or because, like Thalen, they had never before had the opportunity to learn weaponry. Soon, Quinnith set about organising everyone into rotations with equipment, drills and sparring partners. Thalen grimly stuck with the discipline, gradually seeing small tokens of progress. His mood rose when he spied Dagana, a young woman whose brown hair had streaks of Rotha red, joining the burgeoning group. Thalen had long been eager to spend more time with Dagana, but she studied comparative magic, so he rarely had occasion to run into her. Other students and his brothers at home navigated romance adroitly, but Thalen felt as clumsy and self-conscious about courtship as he did with archery. On the practice field, however, he could find excuses to talk to Dagana, and he made the most of these. She didn't seem to mind. In fact, by the end of a week, Thalen could have sworn she sought him out for jokes about who was more fumble-fingered. By the end of 2 weeks, they found excuses to touch one another ever so casually. Thalen reached over to pull her hair out of her eyes, and later that session, Dagana adjusted his grip on the bow. Thalen relished the feeling of her hands on his. After they collected all the strewn-about practice gear, Thalen, Gusty and Quinnith strode together back toward the buildings. Gusty and Quinnith kept whispering to each other. "Stop it, you two," snapped Thalen. "You're acting like children."
"Your stance is improving," said Quinnith, instantly sobering up. "You're remembering to keep your knees loose."
"That is, when you aren't staring across the field like a besotted yearling," added Gusty.
"It's none of your business," snapped Thalen.
"I don't like her," said Gusty, never one to hide her feelings.
What Gusty means to say," said Quinnith.
Thalen glowered. "I heard her. And again, it's none of your business, either of you."
Gusty persisted. "I lodged with Dagana the first year. I know her well. She's too much like you. She's stubborn and closed-minded."
"As am I, Mistress Sharptongue," Thalen challenged her.
Gusty squinted at Thalen as if she could weigh all his strengths and faults. "Well, you can't deny that you're quite focused once you make a decision. After all, who has thrown himself wholeheartedly into worrying about the Oros?"
"Come, let's not argue," said Quinnith. "We had a good practice. Hilidor says he's got some materials we can make padding out of, which will save us a lot of bruises, and that innkeeper I mentioned to you who used to be a brawler, Rillier, has agreed to come later in the week to show us some blocking moves."
"And Thalen's working on a particularly tricky series of thrusts and parries," added Gusty with a wicked smile. Thalen stomped the rest of the way in furious silence.